You're listening to Feeding the Mouth That Bites You with Ashley Parrish and Jessica Pfeiffer,
a weekly podcast guide on parenting teens and launching them into the world. As always, we are joined by psychologist and author, Dr. Ken Wilgus.
Hey, everyone, and welcome back. On today's episode, we're going to be discussing raising teens after divorce. I'm your host, Ashley Parrish. I'm joined by my co-host, Jessica Pfeiffer.
Hey there.
And Dr. Ken Wilgus.
Hey.
I am especially grateful for this episode. If you know my story, then you know that I am from divorced parents and I have been divorced myself. I think this is a great opportunity to kind of get into the nitty-gritty of some questions that parents have that are walking this road. Dr. Ken, I'm especially grateful that you can give us some expert advice on this because I think it's something that we need to talk about.
Well, you know, it's funny. I think I mentioned to you that I had kind of forgotten that this is what this week's program was on. And when y'all reminded me, it just kind of made me chuckle because I feel like I've just spent the last 2 weeks. This is mostly what I've talked about. And so I'm really glad that we're talking about this. It just is important that everyone, that sense of, gee, am I alone in this? Goodness gracious, no. It's virtually every teenager knows kids whose parents are divorced if they are not, in fact, in that circumstance themselves. So I'm really glad we're talking about this.
I totally agree. And I feel like I have so many friends that are in this position, and I'm not exactly sure how to counsel them when they come to me and they're saying, this is what my ex is doing. I'm not exactly sure what I should do with the kids. And I hear that a lot with just friends and family that struggle with this situation. So I'm glad that we're talking about this, and I'm looking forward to hearing some of your answers to my questions.
So Dr. Ken, let's start out. We're at a kind of fork in the road here because we're going to have listeners that are in two different boats. So either they divorced a while ago, several years ago, and now they're parenting this teenager, or the divorce is fresh and it's new.
Yep. Yeah, and those are two different situations. So the first thing that often comes up is if a divorce is happening, how do we talk to the kids about this?
Right.
The answer to what do you say to the kids depends on the age of the kids, especially not even just older kids versus infants, but I mean teenagers versus children. So teenagers can and need to be talked to differently from the same thing you would say to children. That means that the image of sitting everyone down and having the big announcement isn't always the best way to do it. Very often, you might want to think about taking this one teenager I have and these two children I have and telling them separately, obviously not much distance in time so that no one's stuck with that weird knowledge, but my sibling doesn't know. But what you say to a teenager really can and should be different from a child. The main thing that children of any age, including teenagers, the main thing they need to know is, what is this going to look like for us? So you want to try to be prepared with answers for this means that your mom and I are going to be separating here. I'm going to move out in the next week, and then we'll find a place. And within the next few months, we'll have two different places. Something that's, you know, kind of specifics like that, because saying that we're going to divorce doesn't really mean anything. You have to explain, what does that mean? What does that look like for us? So that's your first task in doing that. But I think you can separate out the children from teenagers at different points to really allow them to talk about it, ask about it if they have the wherewithal to do that.
So what do we reveal to our teenager about the divorce? I mean, if you have an older teen, they kind of piece things together. They know that things have been weird between mom and dad, and they're wondering if an affair was in play. And when they ask that specifically, do you answer that question, or do you hide truth, or do you let your spouse, your ex, handle the question if they're to blame? How do you handle that?
Yeah, good question. And that's one thing we'll return to in this episode. I'll give you some general thoughts about it, but we quickly get into territory that my answer is going to be, that's what you need to be in therapy for. Mm-hmm. There are good people, good mediators, good therapists, good psychologists that can really help guide you through a lot of the myriad of individual issues that come up in these things that I don't have general one-stop answers for. So the thing you want to do then is, in general, with children, that is pre-teenagers, you really do want to try to bring forward that this marriage is over. We cannot stay together. And if you can bring a unity to it without any detail of it, then that's probably better, mainly because they need to hear, are we still going to be sort of safe and secure after this? And so with little children, I think it's fine to try to bring as much united front as you can. With teenagers, just be careful that that united front doesn't look ridiculous to knowledgeable teenagers. In their case, the answer to, oh, okay, so, you know, did dad have an affair? The answer to that is, you know, the details of our marriage is not really something that I want to get into with you. And I'm sorry that you, what you've seen or whatever, but I really do not want to talk about your mom or your dad at this point. But I'm not going to tell you that, you know, whether that's true or not. That's just not something that it's helpful to talk about. But the last level, though, is what about after they're adults? They've left home. They're on their own. I would think that by the time you're talking to adult children, it's no longer bad mouthing to simply tell them the story as you see it. Mm-hmm. That, you know, I don't know how, you know, your mother is going to tell it, but I got to tell you that, you know, I did have reason to believe she was unfaithful. And that's why, you know, just being honest about it, that rule of don't badmouth the parent is what you do to make sure that you can still, both parents have effectiveness with this child or teenager in discipline and all that kind of stuff. But it's not a lifelong rule. So after they've grown up, then, yeah, I think it's reasonable, still being gracious about it, but you don't need to hide stuff. But again, children, try to be as united as realistically possible. Teenagers, sometimes united seems silly and they know it's not a united front. But with adults, you can start telling the story as you experience it.
Dr. Ken, what about moving on after the divorce into new relationships?
Yeah, that's actually what came up this week. You know, a long time ago, there was research done on the effects of divorce on children. People knew that divorce is hard on kids. But one of the surprising findings is that often the depression level, for example, of children was worse 5 years after divorce than it was 1 year post-divorce. And the surprising result of that was that children aren't just affected by the breakup of their parents' marriage, but very often the stresses of the kind of shakeup and remaking of new families or whatever it is the parents do afterward. So the general rule is that it is really best not to introduce your kids to someone that you're dating until, what I like to say, is that you're virtually engaged. That's about the first time that they ever need to meet this person. And you'll get pushback from that. People don't like that. They want to know your kids and let's make that part of our agreement. I got to tell you, I disagree. It is hard on your children when they are introduced to people you're dating that they're going to have to say goodbye to. It adds a whole new kind of recapitulation of the same pain they went through already.
I absolutely agree with you, Dr. Ken, because I have friends that gravitate towards me because I have been through a divorce and they will ask me questions and they want a timeline. They want like three months, six months, 9 months. And I tell them, no, there is no timeline. However your relationship develops, see how it goes. And so I love that you said until you're pretty much practically ready or already acting like you are engaged, then let them meet your children and then see how that goes. Because there's not so many times people will date for 3 months or 6 months, then they end up breaking up.
That's right.
They've met your kids. Goodness gracious. It just does so much more harm. And I think in a parent situation, when you're dating after divorce, you're not a single person anymore in regards to you have other people and other little souls that you're, you know, taking into consideration. And that needs to be your first priority. Would you agree?
That's right. That's exactly right. And again, I'll remind you that we're pretty close into territory where you're virtually always going to need the help of a good counselor, someone that objectively knows your kid and objectively knows you and can advise you about that. In my practice, the people that push back on this mostly are dads, to be honest, because we tend to not be as in general. I mean, I'm different, but, you know, a lot of us, there's variation in that. But very often the subtleties of connection, intimacy, and then breaking off connection, and the pain of that is not as apparent to dads, but that's certainly not always dads. I have a lot of moms that do it too. But the point is exactly right that you really need to think about not so much a timeline for yourself, but think about how does this look from my children's eyes and what happened to Miss So-and-so? I thought we were going to see her. Well, we're done with her. And remember the kids of hers that you liked, you're not going to see them anymore. That's just really hard.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to switch gears a little bit because I know that the pressing question for parents who have been divorced for a while is generally something to do with parenting when you have different ideas of boundaries or expectations with your kids, when you have different ideas of discipline.
That's right.
So what happens when we don't agree with our ex on how to discipline or we don't agree on freedoms?
Yeah. Okay. And again, what happens when you're dealing with teenagers? Mm-hmm. I'm sure someone can do a great job of this in talking about dealing with children. Good for them. That's not our deal. With teenagers, the first thing is to make sure that you acknowledge that to your teenager. You can't set up your second marriage and our household. This is what we do. And I don't want to hear the wrong things that, that your mother does at her house. Or, you have to acknowledge that to the teenager that, oh, wait a minute, your dad does let you do that. Okay. Wow. That's rough for you. So you first acknowledge that there is a difference in the two authorities. Number two, remember that teenagers are trying to come to their own understanding of what they are going to say is right and wrong for themselves. They're seeking to be responsible, not obedient. So you can't give a teenager the message that, well, that may be okay at your dad's house, but we do what God says at this house. That's not going to fly with a teenager. You'll end up undercutting each other's authority. So number three, and this is a tough one, is that where you can, and I get it, but where you can, try to establish similar expectations in both households. And I understand that that is very often not possible. After all, that is why you're divorced. But if you can do it, and it can be done, that, hey, I don't like you either, but we both care about our kid. So you're saying that it's okay for her to, fill in the blank. And I'm really concerned about that. Is there a way we can compromise on that? So try to do that. But failing to do that, lastly, then, in that case, it is actually better to consider compromising on some of the tougher ones, like, something you wouldn't do, but strictly for the reason that I understand this is tough for you. It's still not going to make your teenager happy, but I think they need to hear that you are taking into account the complication of hearing two different levels and you're trying to compromise on that. That's going to bristle at some parent's sense of, well, that's wrong. That's bad parenting. I get that, but you are only one of the two parents and no teenager is going to listen to a speech of yours that finishes with, wow, you're right. The more restriction that you're doing is the right way. That's not the level that they are. They hear it as humiliating and patronizing. So you have to kind of really be open in talking about that, hey, I get how hard this is, and be willing to make compromises, hold your nose and compromise on things that you may not think is good, but it is better to try to balance that.
Okay, so can you discipline what goes on at the other house? If you tell your child you're not allowed to date, and then they go to the other parent's house and they're allowed to date, can you discipline what's going on at the other home?
You mean like you're grounded because you went on a date when you were at your mom's house or your dad's house?
More like you're allowed these freedoms or these limits here at our house and dad says something different or mom says something different.
Yeah. In that case, again, I would say dating is a good example. We've already talked about that dating, kind of real individual dating before 16 is really almost never a good idea. So let's say that, the dad allows her to, go with this boyfriend at 15. Really bad, scary. Oh, no. Well, again, for Christian listeners, let me remind you that Jesus is there. He goes on the dates with her. So it's not anything to panic about. But number two, you could absolutely talk with her about, in this example, listen, I really worry about this for you. And I'm sorry, I know that feels bad, but if your dad's allowing that, then, that kid can come over and I'll be happy for him to, he can see you here. Still can't stomach you going, but yeah, he can come over. At least some compromise that lets this kid know that I, you know, I will make that change. I think the other thing that I thought you were kind of getting at is, what about my son just lost his phone for a week at my house, but he's leaving to go to his mother's in 2 days. And what do we do about that? Well, that goes back to what I said earlier. If possible, and it can happen some, I understand it's rare, it is better if you have two parents, exes, that are both, if you can call, you know, his stepmom and say, look, he, you know, has an F in this grade, and I'm told him he can't have his phone. If she, if you have a relationship where she goes, okay, well, I can't have it here either, that's way better. But if you don't have that, then absolutely take that into account in how you make your decisions. You actually do have to limit the discipline, the limits that you set because of the amount of time you have with them. You do not want to have all of the time you have with this kid sunk in consequences. So you, it's still worth giving consequence, but I do want to give every parent permission to have shorter consequences that you can even say, well, it's 2 days. I would have given you a week, but you're leaving in 2 days. So it's just 2 days. Again, this is not math. It's not about making sure they know that this is really bad. These are young adults. They know that, look, you're only half of my parenting units here. And and you just look silly if you don't always keep that in mind and kind of bring that forward yourself when you're, you know, doling out consequences.
So Dr. Kin, we all know that we can't control other people's actions or what other people say. So what do we do when an ex speaks negatively about the parent and the kid comes home and repeats it? How do you handle
that? That's a great question. And I'll start where it may surprise you. You know, the parent listening, you need to be careful about what you're saying about your ex. In other words, this kind of bad mouthing can come up more subtly than you intend. So we'll start with the more obvious that I hope people know. You are really hurting your teenager when you talk badly about their other parent. No, so openly saying that you know, your father is not a good man, and he you know, left us and for another woman, or he bankrupted us. These things, you are talking to this child about their own left arm. These are, you know, your child's parent. You're hurting your kid. You're not, you know, telling some truth telling. It's just harming your child. The harder thing is, what if your ex is openly speaking badly about you? And again, that my experience has been that a lot of times that happens in a teenager actually having a somewhat closer relationship with, say, a mother, and she feels a lot freer to just say stuff. And this dad is stuck with, you know, what am I don't want to violate the rule a bit, you know, don't badmouth. So I think that's where therapy is helpful, in that it is also not helpful to simply close your eyes and allow this teenager to spout off all this stuff that their other parent told them and go, well, I don't want to talk about that. That's tricky business. You do need to answer those things, but trying to avoid a back and forth war of he said, she said, it is surprisingly difficult for parents to sit in my office, try to talk only about parenting and not descend into the very stuff that's so open, painfully wounded stuff that they did with each other. It's really difficult not to go there.
Well, this is a very similar question, but what about when your teen is being manipulated by the other parent or used sort of as a pawn to get at you? How do you respond? What do you have anything you could say that's kind of a blanket statement there, or is it back to counseling?
No, it's a good point. It is a counseling thing, but I will have, a very important blanket statement that is a feeding the mouth exclusive. This is our thing. And that is that when you're hearing stuff from teenagers that, you know, my mom keeps saying, or my dad keeps doing that upsets me, or things that are hurtful, the way you just deal with a teenager in that situation is different from a child. And that is, the general rule is you really need to begin to encourage your teenager to find his or her own voice with the parent they're having a problem with. So, for example, if he's saying, you know, when I go over there, you know, dad is just, you know, always at work, and he comes home and he gets mad at me, and I always, and all I'm doing is chores. I don't know what it is. With a child, you might be tempted to sort of take up for their parent. Well, I'm sure your dad has reasons. That's not what you do with a teenager. With a teenager, you say, wow, what did you tell your dad when he got home? Well, I didn't say anything. Dude, you can talk to your dad about these things. Oh, you know how he is. Again, you'll be tempted to say, yes, I do know how he is. That's not going to help. Mm-hmm. What you do want to say is, listen, I get that it may be tough for you, but you're not six. You're 15. I think you can tell your dad that it bothers you. You should tell him. That's an important difference that I think a lot of times parents don't think about, that is not the same as what you would do with a child. That's a general rule that I think parents don't think about, that the role of, if my kid tells me something unpleasant about the other household, I have to go and do something about it. With little children, you know, very possibly, yes. But remember that with teenagers, they're now at a point of needing to build their own strength in managing these struggles themselves.
So this goes into that. What happens when the situation becomes so bad that your teenager doesn't want to go to be with the other parent? And they're really saying, I don't want to go anymore. I don't want to go to dad's house for the weekend. I don't want to go with mom for the week. What do you do about that?
First of all, you'll be talking to a lawyer. Mm-hmm. And your lawyer is going to do a good job of answering the legal thing. These are the things that you might do that would get you into potential legal trouble. In other words, the lawyer is telling you how a judge is likely to see this. So you obviously are going to be, that's good advice you need to get. On the other hand, I strongly recommend that you get a good therapist involved as well. Because in my psychology side of it, I do worry that the courts don't really recognize that what was an agreement between the two parents and the state that they live in changes when you now have a young adult who is more and more saying, I don't really care what my mom and dad agreed to. I want this. I think that the short answer to what you're saying is you must always get a lawyer and a therapist involved in that circumstance. But what the job you want to think about is with teenagers, particularly, their voice needs to be heard and taken into account.
So, Dr. Ken, as we wrap up, could you quickly do just a bullet point list of some do's and don'ts for the parents listening, all with the understanding that divorce is hard, everybody's situation is different, and that we should all seek counseling and wise wisdom and therapy through all of this. But could you just give us like a bullet point list?
Yes. All right. So here, not in any particular order, do's and don'ts.
Okay.
Good question. Number one, or let's just say the first one, try to equalize the household expectations when possible. We talked about that. The other one is, or I guess number two, do not badmouth your ex. No matter how painful it was in your marriage, they were never married to your ex. This is their parent. Number three, when they do have troubles and tell you troubles they're having with their other parent, help your teenager find their own voice with that parent. And then the last one we touched on is do not introduce new people that you're dating into your child's life until at least what I would say is near engagement. So don't introduce them until you're pretty much committed to them for life.
Those were great words. And I feel like we have done a halfway job, maybe, of talking about this, because there is so much information to be covered here, so many different nuances and different relationships. But I do want to also mention that we didn't talk a whole lot about blended families, and that adds a lot of extra baggage. It adds a lot of extra conversation. I thank you very much for all of the conversation we've had today. I appreciate you guys.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us today. Hit the subscribe button so you won't miss an episode. Also, leave us a review. This is how other listeners find our podcast. Follow us on Instagram at Feeding the Mouth.
We appreciate you and would love to hear from you. If you have any questions, thoughts, or ideas about what we've discussed today, please email us at podcast@feedingthemouth.com.